listening to the Destiny Community Church podcast.
I want to preach my last sermon of 2025. This is the last time I'm speaking for this year. And I want to speak on the topic, fullness of time. Fullness of time. The Christmas season is a special time of year. At its core, Christmas is full of hope. It's full of peace and joy and love. The elements that we've discussed during the lighting of the Advent candles, those are the very topics that we've covered: hope, peace, joy, and love. Advent is 4 weeks of remembrance and holy anticipation. I love Advent. But if your life is anything like mine, Christmas is also full of busyness. I don't know how many of you are experiencing the stress of how busy life is right now leading into Christmas. Our schedules get filled with shopping, parties, overtime, and then just special events. It just seems like our calendars are packed during this time of year. And the intentions are good, but sometimes, church, the Christmas season can feel a little less peaceful and just a lot more full. And Advent is not about us filling our time full, but rather about taking time to remember the one who fills time full. And I want to explain that to you, because he is the one who fills time full. God is the creator of time. And I've preached this many times, but I just want to reiterate it for a few moments. God is the creator of time. And there's one phrase that I think has to offend God. If I was God, if I was the creator of time as he is, this phrase would offend me, and that's this: there's not enough hours in a day. And I get it. I'm guilty of saying it, okay? But there's not enough hours in a day. I looked at someone this week and I said, I need one more day this week. Like to get caught up, I need 8 days in this week. Like I'm not going to get everything done that needs to be done. And so when we say there's not enough hours in a day, are we suggesting that the creator of the universe, the creator of all, got it wrong when he designed the 24-hour structure that we complain about? Genesis 1 and 5 tells us God called the light day and the darkness he called night, and there was evening and there was morning the first day. So he created the 24-hour day. But not only did he create the 24-hour day, God also created the 7-day week. Genesis 2 and 2 tells us, and on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God created the 24-hour day. God created the 7-day week. I'll even go as far as to say this. God created the 365-day year. And we know that just from the way that the heavens move. God created the 365-day year. And so when we say we don't have enough time, are we suggesting that God got it wrong? I know it's not intentional, but it's not that we don't have enough hours. We just allow our hours to become consumed with too many things. And so society has taught us to be proud of the full plate and even to brag on it. And this is something that doesn't impress me. It used to, when I was younger, when I was immature in my faith, when someone would tell me how busy they were, It impressed me, but the older I get, the more precious time becomes. And I'm starting to realize that that doesn't impress me at all. If your plate is full, it speaks volumes about who you are. And I know some of you are like, man, Pastor, we get this every July. This is not the month of Sabbath. Why are you covering this right now? Because you've already forgotten it. You've already messed it up. But what if there was a paradigm shift and we actually celebrated those who are not too busy? What if we high-five those who make time for God and make time for their families? What if we actually would strive to control our schedules and not let our schedules control us? I read the story of a man who worked at a factory located in the center of town. And one of the responsibilities of his job was to blow the whistle at 5 p.m. every day, signifying that it was time to get off from work so the whole factory would know it's quitting time. Every day this man walked to work and he passed by a jewelry store where this beautiful grandfather clock was displayed in the window. And every morning this man would walk by the clock and he would stop and he would adjust his watch according to that grandfather clock. He did this for years, and he never understood why it seemed like his watch was a little fast. So he would match to the grandfather clock, and he did this for years. One morning, the store owner was out front sweeping the sidewalk, and the factory worker walked by, and he asked him, he says, "How does that grandfather clock keep such accurate time?" And the jeweler said, he said, "Oh, I set it every afternoon when the factory whistle blows at 5. Time is crucial. Time is critical. You're not going to get it back. It's the commodity that no one else can make. You can't buy it back. You can't get it back. But it seems that we never have enough time. And I've come to that conclusion that if I can't get it back, if I can't buy it back, then I need to make it a priority because they're not making any more of it." A.W. Tozer said, "Time is a resource that is non-renewable and non-transferable. You cannot store it, slow it up, hold it up, divide it up, or give it up. You can't hoard it up and save it for a rainy day. When it's lost, it's unrecoverable. When you kill time, remember that it has no resurrection." In his book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey writes, "Time management is a misleading concept. You can't really manage time. You can't delay it, speed it up, save it, or lose it. No matter what you do, time keeps moving forward at the same rate. The challenge is not to manage time, but to manage ourselves." You see, it's all about priority. And there are primarily 2 Greek words in the New Testament that is used for the word time, and some of you have heard me share these before, but really quick, I want to talk about them. The first word is the word chronos. Some of you are familiar with this. Chronos is one of the main Greek words that's used for the word time, and it means clock or calendar time. We spend most of our lives living in the chronos. Every time you look at your calendar, you are living in chronos time. Every time you check your watch, you're living in chronos time. Every time you schedule an appointment, you're living in chronos time. And every time you're running late, like some of you were for church, you're living on chronos time. As a matter of fact, the human life, get this, I don't want you to miss it, the human life is physically planted in the center of chronos time. Like, how we know ourselves in this physical body is planted right dab in the center of chronos time. It's where our physical form exists. But there's a second Greek word that is used in the New Testament for the word time, and it's the word kairos. Kairos. And this word is a little bit more interesting. It means a supernatural or divine appointment. It's a special moment. It's just not another second, a minute, or hour. It is a very significant moment. It's a time when conditions are right for the accomplishment. It's an opportune and decisive moment. And I have experienced numerous kairos moments in my life. I'll say this, the day that I got married to this beautiful woman was a kairos moment for me. Have you looked at me? I don't deserve that. And that's enough out of you. My brother-in-law, amen, and a little bit too loud up here. Security. The day that my children were born, what a kairos moment. That was a special moment for me. The day that my grandson was born, it made me forget about my children. I mean, just a special moment. The day that God called me into ministry is a kairos moment for me. I know that. I know that moment, that divine appointment when God called me into ministry. The day that we launched DCC is a kairos moment. Sure, it was in September of 2006. It falls within the chronos, but within the chronos moments of life, we have these kairos moments where God intervenes and God does something significant. in our lives. These are moments that are etched into my mind, and they will forever stand out as divine appointments. And although our physical beings exist in Chronos time, our spirits exist in Kairos time. It's beyond the natural. It's supernatural. Unfortunately, most people go through life focused on their Chronos. We get so caught up in the mundane. We get up and we go to work, or we go to school. We eat lunch with the same people. We get off work and we go home to the same five meals that we had the last week. And we get up the next morning and we do it all over again. That's just how life is. And our lives are filled with these clock and calendar time moments. But it's about time that we stop living for the Chronos moments and we start living for the Kairos moments. Church, I want you to walk out of this room today expecting God to show up, expecting God to do something, because I believe that Kairos moments are on the horizon, not only for this church corporately, but I believe that us as individuals, that God is ready to do something great and mighty that cannot be explained. I believe God is up to something. You might feel like time is running out, but understand this, God is not bound by time. He created time, and the Creator is not bound by His creation. There's a song that we used to sing in church called On Time God. Oh, you know it? The song said, He's an on time God. Yes, He is. He's an on time God. Yes, He is. Then it says, He may not come when you want Him, but He'll be there right on time. He's an on-time God. Y'all just need to come on up here to the choir. God is not bound by time. He created time. Creation is never going to bind the Creator. He controls time. And there was this moment in time in Galatians chapter 4 that talks about this moment in time where the Chronos had to give way to the Kairos. And I want to read it to you this morning. Galatians chapter 4, verses 3 through 7. This is really a Christmas message, but it doesn't feel like it. But here it comes. Get ready, because this is what it's about. Galatians 4, verses 3 through 7. And it reads like this. In the same way, we also, when we were children, were enslaved to the elementary principles of the world. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth His Son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons. And because you are sons, God has sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir through God. Man, somebody say amen to that. Amen? Man, we're no longer slaves to our sin. We are joint heirs with Christ. Amen. How many of you know that timing is everything? Timing matters in music. If you've ever, and maybe this happened to you today in this service, if you've ever been stuck next to someone during worship, when the band's playing, and they don't have rhythm, and they try to clap, it can be troubling. I'm going to be good. It'll be good. They might be in the room. Timing matters in music. It does. Timing matters in dating. When you got to get, two people lined up heading in the same direction in life. Timing matters in dating. Timing matters in sports. You can throw the perfect pass, but if the receiver is not running the right route, timing matters in a healthy heartbeat. You let a heart get out of rhythm, and it affects someone in their entirety. Timing is everything. And when it came to the birth of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, timing was the key. Why was Jesus born when He was born? Why? You've had to wonder this. You've had to think about this at some point. Why wasn't He born earlier when the Jews were actually expecting Him? Why wasn't He born later? Why was He born when He was born? Well, the Apostle Paul answers this question for us in our text when he said these words in verse 4, Galatians 4:4. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth His Son, born of woman, born under the law. It's that phrase, fullness of time. This phrase, fullness of time, is an interesting word in the Greek language. It comes from the Greek word pleroma. And it describes something that is completely developed. Don't miss it. Something that is completely developed. Like fruit that is ripe. It's completely developed. Now's the time to pick the fruit. Like a mother that is at the end of her pregnancy, she has gone full term. The baby is completely healthy. It refers to that appointed time. And Paul is saying that at the ripe time, at full term, when everything was just right, God sent forth his son. Listen to how it reads in the New Living Translation, Galatians chapter 4, verses 4 and 5. But when the right time came, that's the key. That's for the rest of us in the room that don't always understand the Bible. But when the right time came, he's telling us that at just the right moment, God sent his son, born of a woman, subject to the law. God sent him to buy freedom for us who were slaves to the law so that he could adopt us as his very own children. He wanted us as his children so bad because from the beginning, God has always wanted a family. That's it. God's always wanted a family. And he wanted us to be his children so bad that at just the right moment, when everything was right, when everything was full term, when the scenario was perfect, he sent forth his son. God looked down through the ages and saw the perfect opportunity for Emmanuel, God with us, to show up. He wasn't premature. He wasn't late. He was right on time because our God is an on-time God. Amen? And what we will see is that all the pieces were in place to facilitate the most important birth in the history of humanity, the birth of the Son of God. So really quick, I just want to give you like three things here on why it was the perfect time for the birth of Christ. First of all, Jesus was born into an empire. It was the Roman Empire. And to this day, it was one of the most dominant world powers to ever exist. It was built upon the foundation of the Greek Empire, led by the greatest military general the world has ever known. And around 400 years before the birth of Christ, the Persians were in power. But in 332 BC, led by Alexander the Great, the Greeks defeated the Persians. And it's setting all of this up. He did something that no one else had ever done. He conquered the entire known world, and he did it all in less than 12 years. The known world, civilized society, or up to that point, what would be civilized? He conquered the entire known world in 12 years. By his side was a Greek philosopher by the name of Aristotle. Aristotle, his influence would change society. Alexander established Greek cities so people would know that he had been there. He was leaving his mark. The architecture was Greek. The arts were Greek. Literature was Greek. Even the way that people processed was Greek. And it was called the way of Greek thinking. Like, we want you to think like we do. Sounds like both sides of the aisle right now, right? Alexander was egocentric, to say the least, and wanted to leave his mark on society. He wanted to be remembered. It worked. And by the time Christ was born, Greek was the universal language. For the first time since the Tower of Babel in the book of Genesis, the entire known world spoke one universal language, Greek. Thanks to Alexander the Great, Greek was the universal language of the known world. This meant that if you could speak Koine Greek, which was common Greek, if you could speak Koine Greek, then you could successfully spread a message to the known world controlled by the Roman Empire. At the time of the birth of Christ, if you could speak Koine Greek, you could take your message north, south, east, and west, and it would be understood. Next, the Romans ushered in what is known as Pax Romana, which means peace of Rome. And this is so important because there was a roughly 200-year period of peace and order. Sure, the Romans were in control, but what they were doing is they were maintaining a civil society for the most part. As long as you would abide by their rules, peace was in play. And you can see a noticeable difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. Just read it. Read it for yourself. The way society operates, it's very primitive in the Old Testament. You get to the New Testament, things have changed. This is why. By the time we reach the birth of Christ, society is not as primitive as it once was, and in comparison, society was probably the most civilized it had been up until that point. This meant people could travel in peace without the fear of being beaten and robbed and even killed as they traveled. Finally, the greatest contribution that the Romans made to the Christian movement was this, and they didn't even know they were doing it, was the road system. The Roman road system. The Roman roadways made it possible for travelers to travel quickly and safely. There's an old saying, all roads lead to Rome. And this was more than just a saying, it was documented truth because all roads did lead to Rome. Rome had expanded. They had crisscrossed the known world with this complex yet convenient road system, complete with a highway patrol system and even a postal service. It was so advanced for that age. And the world population was set to explode. Don't miss it, church. Don't miss it. The world population was set to explode. One universal language and a system of advanced roads that could be traveled safely set the stage for the spread of the gospel to the known world. That's the reason why Christ was born when he was born. It was so key. And I'm afraid sometimes that we don't realize that when heaven is silent, when God doesn't seem to be listening or certainly not speaking, we don't realize what's going on behind the scenes. Because during 400 years of silence between the Old Testament and the New Testament, when there's no prophetic word at all, during those 400 years where the Bible is not being recorded, there's no written word during that time, God was orchestrating the perfect atmosphere for his son to be born in. A universal language, a road system where people could travel in peace. And God said, this is the fullness of time. It is ripe. It is full term. It is the right environment for my son to come forth and be born for the and to live and die for the sins of humanity. He knew this was the moment. And here's my message to you in all of that, because that's great history, and we need to understand that, but it's so much more than that, because it's also about our future. And here's my message for you. It's this simple. Don't despise the dark years. Don't despise what some of you are going through right now where it doesn't feel like God cares. Don't despise these moments where you feel like you're by yourself, you're all alone. You know, sometimes you can be in a crowded home and still feel like you're all by yourself. God sees you. God knows you. And God is orchestrating plans that you have no idea what he's doing. He's laying the foundation so that Christ can show up and be God in your life. And you don't need to despise that. Really quick, in closing, I want to share this with you just to kind of show you how this played out in my own personal life. I was on staff at a church in Tampa for 7 years, and the first 5 years, things were great. The last 2 years, I was miserable. There were no problems. I love the church. To this day, I love that church. I love the people I work with. We had no problems, but I was unfulfilled in my calling. And it was dark for me. I was not enjoying what I was doing. And I felt like God was releasing me from that church, but I didn't have an answer. I didn't know what to do. And for those of you that have been on a job and it's not fulfilling, but yet you don't have anywhere else to go, you know exactly this feeling that I was feeling. It was a dark time for me. And the opportunity came for us to plant a church. And if you know this story, you know that originally we were looking at Alachua, and I thought that's where we would plant, and we were approved to plant a church there. But I saw two other churches in the area that I felt like offered some similar programming and similar style like ours would eventually be. And so, therefore, I just decided I don't want to go there and be in competition with other churches. And I know that phrase bothers some of you, and I apologize. I don't want to look at other churches that way, but in reality, when two churches are similar in style, people have to choose between the two. And I just didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do that to that community. And so God opened the door through a series of events for us to come to Newberry. Newberry, and just from the naked eye looking at it, it was not ideal. The population for Newberry at the time was 4,700 people. We're moving from Tampa. It's a little bit of a population difference. I mean, here's what Mandy and I realized when we got here. Our kids, they adapted a whole lot faster than we did. Like, we were used to the hustle and bustle, you know. It was just, it was 21 miles from our house to the office where I worked. It would take us an hour and 15 minutes to get there every morning. Just crazy. But we were used to that. You get to Newberry, and I can leave 3 minutes. Then, now things are changing, but I could leave and be there in 3 minutes. And it didn't seem like the perfect place to plant a church. But I started doing some research as the doors were opening, and I started realizing that this might be the right scenario, because Gainesville was landlocked. And eventually, it's going to have to start growing somewhere. And as I looked around, Pastor Andrew, he'll tell you the story. This is part of my spill that I set him and Deanna down at a table near Brooksville, Florida, I believe is where we were at. We sat at a restaurant, and I laid all this out for him. And I wasn't even sure if I believed it myself, but I was trying to convince him to come and be on staff. But Gainesville had to grow somewhere, and everywhere I looked, it was either swampland or it was already landlocked. And it was like Newberry Road, that corridor was it. And I was like, this is where it's going to grow. We planted a church and a recession hit, and nothing was growing. It was once again quiet. There were moments that I scratched my head wondering, am I in the right place? Like, did I miss God? Because God, I'm not sure you're here. What God was doing behind the scenes in my life, he was growing me. He was growing me. He was teaching me things. He was growing me as just a servant of God. He was growing me as a leader, as a pastor, as a communicator. Oh, it used to be worse than this. But he was growing me. And everything was lining up just right. The church that we would plant, yeah, it's not quite what it looks like today, but I knew it would have a modern worship song selection firmly grounded in our roots for an appreciation for hymns, and that worked in Newberry. We would have a dynamic kids ministry that would minister to young families. We would have a great youth ministry that they would grow into. You know, our first small group that we ever led, Mandy and I led a senior adult luncheon, and we would do it every month. That was the first small group. We were aiming to minister from the cradle to the grave. And that was exactly what Newberry, Florida needed. I wonder sometimes if I would have let the frustration, the loneliness, if I would have let the discouragement sometimes take root, what would have happened? And I'm not naive enough to think that if I miss God, that God's work stops, okay? That's not what I'm getting at right now, because really what I'm sharing with you is less about how great DCC is, and more about the calling that was on my life. What if I would have been discouraged enough to step out of what God was doing when I couldn't understand the universal language, the road system? God was lining everything up in my life, just as he wants to line everything up in your life. When the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his son. And when the fullness of time comes in your life, you'll see God step back into the scene. And he'll show up and he'll show out. And I promise you, it'll make sense in that moment.
Thanks for listening to the Destiny Community Church podcast. To learn more about DCC, including our service times and location, visit us at destinycommunitychurch.org.